The doors will open at 7 a.m. tomorrow at polling places across Wisconsin. It's the state partisan primary, and while turnout is usually pretty light, the stakes are very high for those running for U.S. Senate, Congress, and the state legislature. Today we'll talk about the primary and general contests with two high-ranking political party officials from Western Wisconsin, right here this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening to us this Monday morning on Wisconsin Public Radio 88.3 and 88.7. Joining me in studio are the 3rd Congressional District Chairs for the Republican and Democratic Party. First, I'd like to welcome Brian Westrate. He is the 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair. Brian Westrate, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And to my right, if that matters in radio land, Lisa Herman is the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party Chair. Lisa Herman, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
To be clear, she's to my left.
To your left. Oh, well, we're already at our first impasse. Listeners, please give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Again, we've got the party chairs for the 3rd Congressional District. They oversee their party workings on a pretty large scale. I mean, the 3rd District is huge, so they cover much of Western Wisconsin. If you've got a question about a candidate, if you've got a thought about a candidate, let us know. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. And you can also post on the West Side Facebook page. So only 16% of registered voters usually are expected to cast a ballot tomorrow. So with turnout that light, are your parties doing anything to get voters excited? And Brian Westrate, I'll start with you.
Well, I mean, we don't really have any significant primaries above the kind of state assembly or state senate level. Here in the 3rd, we don't have a Republican challenger to Congressman Kind. Up in the 7th, there's technically a primary with Congressman Duffy, but he's a sitting congressman who's been reelected several times. So we have the local assembly races here in the 3rd that we're excited about finding out who the winners will be, because I think pretty much without exception they're all good people, that the party has kept out of the primary. We don't pick winners and losers in primaries. So we're just excited to start the general election in those races, throughout the 3rd District and across the state. So
sure.
No, we don't have any significant drives going on or anything like that.
And what about for the Democrats, Lisa Herman?
The Democrats are pretty much in the same position.
Yeah.
In the primaries, we try our best not to get involved in the specific campaigns, but more offer resources to anyone who's running.
Mm-hmm.
And our real primary at the congressional level is here in the 3rd.
Yeah.
And then and up in the 7th, we have two great candidates running up there. But again, our main primary focuses have been here in the assembly districts in the district.
And what kind of, just for the layman who hasn't run for election or statewide office, what kind of questions, what kind of assistance are you able to give people running for in a primary like this? So if I've, if I've taken my first stab at state legislative office, what kind of help can you give?
Well, we have a number of voter access files, that programs that offer voter access information that we can hook our candidates up with.
Mm-hmm.
We have basically at the county party level, volunteers and person resources.
Okay. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're talking this hour on the West Side about the primary tomorrow, some of the races we're going to look at that are going to be on the ballot tomorrow. Then we'll talk about the general election in Wisconsin and some of the bigger trends there. 1-800-228-5615. Lisa, the Senate has the U.S. Senate race that everyone seems to be watching nationwide. There's a primary in that, and I didn't even know recently until recently there was a primary challenger to Russ Feingold. So, of course, Russ Feingold was the former U.S. senator, lost his seat to Ron Johnson in 2010. So people are watching that, but Feingold has a Democratic primary opponent named Scott Harbach. What do we know about him, and can you tell us about Scott at all?
To be honest, I don't know much about Scott as well. he seems to be running, as he puts it, it was divine intervention that he is running for office. So I'm not sure what exactly that means. I've not seen any particular points that he's made about the office itself. So I can't tell you much more than that.
And it seems like in some of these cases, whether no matter what the office, there are some people who seem to run just to get involved.
I was just going to say, I had no idea that there was a primary on the Democrat side for U.S. Senate. So so this gentleman is obviously not overly effective. It is – I don't know if you found this, but it is – been fascinating to me that people will wake up one morning and say, you know what? I think my first foray into politics is going to be the U.S. Senate.
That's pretty –
I mean, this is America. You can do that. If you're over the age of 35 and a legal resident and you can get the signatures, you can get your name on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But it just really doesn't tend to work out very well. And we see – I don't know if you've seen this on the Democrat side, but I regularly, you know, you'll get – I just last week had a young man contact me, wants to run for Congress against Congressman Kind at some point in the future. He's only 24 at this point, so he couldn't even legally do it this year. And we've never heard of him before. I mean, he's never come into a county office. He's not a member of the county party. And with those individuals, you know, you do your best – to explain, you know, the place to start is to join your county party, mm-hmm. get involved, help whoever the candidate is this cycle, help maybe run for the county board, run for the city council. And then sometimes you just get those individuals that come heck or high water. They think, you know, their first foray should be the United States House of Representatives, which again, and I don't mean to chuckle because I'm not denigrating their desire to serve. It's just kind of not the way politics works in modern America.
And why is that, Lisa Herman? Why? I mean, there definitely seems to be a ladder that you climb, whether you start, you know, in city council or the county, then the state, et cetera.
Well, I think that it has a lot to do with learning the process.
Mm-hmm.
Politics is a job where you're required to work with people who disagree with you most of the time.
Yeah.
And so the whole entire process is all about coming to some kind of compromise that moves your position forward as well as moves their position forward. And in order to do that, the best way is to start at the local level where the people that you're dealing with are the people that you see every day, that you see in the grocery store, that you have common local interests with, and therefore it's easier to come to compromises on those things that you're both very familiar with.
Sure.
Once you get to the national level, the spectrum of things that you have to deal with and the responsibility for people that are far outside your personal reach, when you look at a national race or a national position, It just requires a certain knowledge of how those compromises come to be, and you learn that when you start at the beginning, which is right at the school board or the county board or the city council.
I mean, absolutely, and I think that study after study has shown that you can't learn how to be a politician. I mean, it's not you can't go to school for it. You can get a poli-sci degree and understand how politics is supposed to work and whatnot, but that politics is really a unique endeavor. It's not like being in business. It's not like being, you know, being a teacher or being a plumber or being a business person. It's sort of a unique set of skills and abilities and challenges. And as Lisa said, if you start at that local level, you get a flavor for it. You get some idea. I mean, and if you can't work with your friends and neighbors, there's no way you're going to be able to work with other Congress people. And then on top of it is you have to have some name recognition and be able to raise some money. And I remember talking in 2010 to a U.S. Senate candidate who wasn't raising any money. You know, and I said, look, here's the thing, Dave, is if you can't get your friends and neighbors to give you money, what makes you think I'm going to be able to get my friends and neighbors to give you money? I mean, it's a process. It's basically you don't start working at UPS – you know, running the package line in the assembly area and then expect to go to CEO as your next jump. I mean, it's just kind of politics is a business also. I mean, and I don't mean that, but there's a process. There's a learning curve. And leadership very rarely is leadership innate. I mean, it is something that you're just – and there are those people who are just incredible leaders from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But even those people, usually leadership is something that has to be developed over time, and it's through the process of I mean, I don't know about, you know, with how you feel about it, but 10 years ago when I started in political leadership, I was an entirely different person than I am now. And there's been 10-year maturation process where you learn because you learn to do it. And as you said, to compromise with people.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. We've got a caller right now, and we'll take that call in just a minute. I want to re-identify what we're talking about. We're previewing tomorrow's primary election. Also, we're going to talk about the general election, the candidates, some of the trends, some of the just overall trends like anti-establishment right now. It's really interesting. It's been a heck of a wild election so far for, the presidential, of course, but there's a lot going on at the state and the congressional level as well. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. I'm joined by Lisa Herman. She is the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party Chair, and Brian Westrate is the 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair, and we're chatting about politics. 1-800-228-5615. Right now, we got Chuck in Shatek. You're on the air, Chuck. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for having this show. I've worked the polls for several years, and some people come into this voting tomorrow, and they won't realize that they have to pick a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Barron County, we have 2 people running for an important position, and they're both on the same ticket. They're both in the same party. Therefore, those who pick the other party won't be able to vote for that position at all, and that position will be determined tomorrow by who wins. Unless there happens to be some big write-in campaign, which I doubt, here in Barron County, for the other side, there's a problem with that, in that people will come in and say, "Well, what's his name on the ballot?" And then it will immediately, And as a poll worker, I can't say which party did you pick.
Right.
I'll have to figure out some way to say he may be running on the other party.
Sure.
And then they won't get to vote for that important position, which is the DA, by the way. And so that position will be determined tomorrow. There should be something in law where if there's just somebody like that running, I'd like to hear what Brian and Lisa have to say about that, because that's not really fair to the voters to have that determined by just one party that decides to show up and vote tomorrow, which is a low turnout anyway.
Sure.
But
sure.
If there could be some change in the law that would let people cross over when there's just people running on one side during a primary.
Gotcha. Thanks so much for the call, Chuck. Let's start with Lisa.
Well, Chuck, since I'm not a legislator and I can't help you change election law, but I can, I did want to say that a primary election is designed to determine each party's selection for the general election. So that's why if there's more than one person running in a party, you can only choose one party, and then that's your selection. I understand what you're saying about wanting everyone to have a choice, but every choice comes at the general election level. And so I'm not entirely sure how they'd go about doing that. But, just for reference, primary is designed specifically to choose for each party to choose their representative that will then be at the general election. So if there's not another candidate from the other side running in the general election, it's an unfortunate circumstance.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, and like Lisa said, I'm also not a legislator, but I think that over the years, I've thought, for instance, Chippewa County has, I believe, a partisan coroner election. Oh. I mean, you reach a point at which I think that an argument could certainly be made that perhaps some of these offices shouldn't be partisan, in which case they would be on the spring nonpartisan election period. But as Lisa said, I mean, look, we've been a two-party system since the second presidential election in this country. And the parties have changed over time, but they've always basically been two. You've got the Bull Moose, you've got Ross Perot, but for the most part, I mean, it's been a two-party system. It's just the nature of the beast. And, I had a friend of mine is a public prosecutor in South Bend, Indiana, and I was talking to him during the primary about how I wanted him to vote in Indiana's primary for the Republican Party. And he said, you know, sorry, I'm a registered Democrat for this primary, because he had a friend running for coroner that he wanted to vote for who happened to be a Democrat. Oh. And, you know, I mean, so it's just those are choices we kind of have to make as the electors. And, you know, Chuck, look, they always say about the American system, it's the worst system in the world except for all the rest. You know, I mean, it's kind of the best we've come up with.
I think there's a good point to be made about the partisan races at the local level. And I think things like sheriff, treasurer, county clerk, all of those things really do bear looking at making them nonpartisan and moving them to the spring election so that everyone at that local level has input on who those people
are. Because plenty of other local races like county board, those are nonpartisan, right?
Those are nonpartisan.
Same city council as well, yeah. Sure. Let's take our first break here on the West Side. We're talking with Lisa Herman of the Democratic Party and Brian Westrate of the Republican Party about the election tomorrow and the November general election coming up, and before we know it, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from Midwest Women's Herbal Conference, celebrating 5 years of gathering, October 7th through the 9th in Almond, with Rosemary Gladstar and friends and workshops for all levels of experience. MidwestWomensHerbal.com.
Children can celebrate nature and all things outdoors during the L.A. Phillips Public Library summer program Camp Readaway. It runs through August 15th. Youth of all ages can pick up reader folders at the Youth Services Desk. Information online at ecpubliclibrary.info.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm here with Brian Westrate, 3rd Congressional District Chair for the Republican Party, and also the Lisa Herman is the 3rd Congressional District Chair for the Democratic Party in our region. We're talking about the primary election and the fall general election. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. There are congressional party primary challenges all over the place, but for our listening area, we're talking about the 3rd and the 7th districts held by Democrat Ron Kind and Republican Sean Duffy, respectively. In the 3rd congressional district, Ron Kind, who has been in Congress for 18 years, he's having his first challenge by another Democrat, as far as I know, since winning his seat. Retired Eau Claire history teacher and ardent Bernie-crat, Myron Buckles, wants to unseat Ron Kind this fall, so what is the significance, Lisa Herman, of Ron Kind having his first opponent from within the Democratic Party in nearly two decades?
Well, I think...
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
I think that it has a lot to do with the general tenor of politics today.
Yeah.
There are people who believe that we need to make some serious changes and in the way that government functions at the highest levels, and they've managed to put together a pretty good campaign and some pretty good arguments, and so we're seeing candidates all over at all different levels that are trying to move those kind of ideas forward. So
and this is another situation I would imagine where the Democratic Party does not get involved officially, even when you've got someone who is kind of, you know, a big part of the Wisconsin Democratic Party.
Well, that's true. I mean, Ron has been a party leader for a long time, and that again is a case where we try our best not to get involved. Of course, he has resources that he's garnered over the years, so it's not something you can take away, but we've done our best to try and help Mr. Buckles at least get the same information that's available. And so
what kind of a hill is that to climb? I mean, you've got a...
Well, you know, I give anyone credit who has the fortitude to mount a campaign, run a campaign. Myron has run an excellent campaign, and it's no small feat to take on that task. And
to put it in perspective, we didn't try this cycle.
I want to get to that in just a bit.
He's doing a great job, and so I give him just a load of credit for doing that.
So while the Republican Party doesn't have a candidate in this race, and we'll ask about that in a little bit, is there any way the Republican Party can try to work maybe with someone to take out kind, but I guess both of them are
Democrats. I'll be voting for Myron on Tuesday because okay. I'm in a district that I don't have any primaries on my ballot for the Republicans.
Sure.
You know, just as a protest vote against Ron, I guess. I think that Myron's campaign, much like Bernie's and honestly much like Donald Trump's, it just shows – and I've been saying this for months – both the Democrat and the Republican side, despite the severe ideological divide, what we're seeing in this country is people are just sick and tired of a Washington, D.C. that doesn't work. I think the 50 petri dishes of legislature that are the state governments are largely defining themselves and doing well in many cases. But the Washington, D.C. is broken. And I think that you know, for the first time in 18 years, a primary challenger to Congressman Kind, primary challenger to Congressman Duffy up in the 7th. Paul Ryan has a primary challenger. I mean, you know, you have a better chance of beating almost anybody, I think, as a primary challenger than Paul Ryan. He's down in the reddest part of our state. And I think it just shows that there are some significant percentages of American people who are just flat out fed up with the Washington, D.C. not working for them. And here's one of the, I think, darndest things is you've got Congress with a 17% approval rating. And that has, I mean, through Democrat control into Republican control, probably back into Democrat control, one way or the other, it stays at that less than 30% approval rating. Yet we have an 88 to 92% incumbency rate for the last two decades.
Yeah.
And so it's yes, I hate Congress, but I love my congressman. And at some point, that's an intellectual disconnect. I mean, take whether it's Sean Duffy or Ron Kind, but take people who have been in an office for years and years and years. How can they, if you believe there's a problem, how can they not be part of the problem? Mm-hmm. And so it that's, I think, what we're seeing here this cycle is just enough people who don't buy it anymore. They're not believing Lisa and I when we say, hey, you know, the process is working, that, you know. Because as we, you know, Lisa and I were talking about before the show, they're not in our seats. They haven't had a chance to see that it's not nearly as nefarious, not nearly as manipulated as people seem to think it is. But I think that's the result of a Donald Trump candidacy. How Bernie Sanders, I mean, one of the whitest white men on the face of the planet, who's, you know, 70 plus years old from a small eastern state, almost defeated the Clinton machine mm-hmm. again. You know, and I continue to say, had he been a female Latina or something like that, he probably would have defeated Hillary. And so I just, you know, and then Donald Trump defeating a 16-person panel or candidacy of just some of the most accomplished individuals the Republican Party has to offer. That's an American public who's just flat out fed yeah, up.
Definitely.
Well, I think that makes a good argument, too, for nonpartisan redistricting and districts that are not 65-35.
Right.
You know, one way or the other, and so that we end up with districts that are 50-50 and give people likely more, far more options.
Playing off of that, I'd like to ask why there isn't a Republican. Is that the way the maps have been drawn? They definitely have made some districts safer for Republicans. Some districts seem to be safer for Democrats. Is that part of the reason why you're not seeing a Republican running for the against Kind in the
yeah,
fall?
Yeah, there's no question that is. I mean, and to Lisa's point, I mean, for what it's worth, I would argue that nonpartisan doesn't exist. I mean, you can give it to a panel of judges, but to suggest that judges – Greg Peterson is a guy – I grew up in the neighborhood with Greg. He's a former 3rd District Appellate Court judge. Greg's dad was a massive Democrat supporter and volunteer here in Eau Claire County. So, I mean, the idea that nonpartisan exists in today's modern America, I think, is somewhat absurd. But you could do it as a bipartisan effort. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there were our ways you could do. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about what makes sense here. What does it make more sense to have, for instance, the city of Eau Claire represented by Dana Wachs? Eau Claire is a Democrat town. It just absolutely is a Democrat town by voting trends,
yeah, but
by
if you
ideology.
Get 20 miles out of town.
Right. And so does it maybe make sense to have Dana representing the people of Eau Claire and have Kathy and Warren representing the rest of the county? Because the rest of Eau Claire County is not Democrat. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a 60% of the county, the city of Eau Claire, is Democrat, 40% of the county, non-Democrat, and they're not represented by Dana. So that you can make a case that makes sense, but you can also make a case, as Lisa has, that and others have, that, you know, that competition would be good, that because it would force that representative to have to reach across the aisle a bit more. It is what it is. Okay, the decagonal election is where if one party controls all three, they get to redistrict. I would argue, and I'm sure maybe Lisa would disagree, but I would argue the Democrats would have done exactly the same thing as the Republicans did.
In other states, we've seen the Democrats. I mean, Illinois, for example, they've really
Right. I mean, I think it's if you give people, politicians, power, they are going to use it. Okay. Yeah. But that being said, absolutely. Here in the 3rd District, we looked at the lines. They took the St. Croix Valley out of the 3rd District, which is Hudson. That's a 60-40 Republican area. Then they gave us Portage County, which has the UW-Stevens Point in it. Mm-hmm. The 3rd District now has more institutions of higher public education mm-hmm. than any of the other 7 congressional districts in Wisconsin.
There are 5.
Yes. And you know, you look at
5
the trends.
5 main campuses.
Absolutely. And, mm-hmm. and look at the trends. College towns tend to vote Democrat. And so the 3rd District got demonstrably less Republican because of redistricting. And then we looked at it and we said, okay, Ron Kind has an over $2 million war chest. He's an 18-year incumbent. The closest we came was 2010 before redistricting with a sitting state senator who was well-liked from Ron's hometown, being Dan Kopenky.
Right?
He comes within 3 percentage points and after spending $350,000. And so I think Lisa could probably speak to this as well. Volunteer political leadership is allocating extremely limited resources to unlimited need. And so you look at it and you say, okay, the 3rd District Republican Party of Wisconsin has $10,000 to donate. Do we want to put $5,000 towards a candidate who has literally zero chance of defeating Ron Kind just so that people have something on their ballot to check a box next to? Or do we use that $5,000 for 3 assembly races that we have a chance to hold a seat or possibly pick one up? So we ran the numbers and we just made a political calculation to not just have a placeholder candidate to run against Ron. And then Myron decided to run, and he became – he's on my permanent Christmas card list, but
good luck. We saw the Democrats try the placeholder candidate. At least that's what it looked like to me. Back in 2012, was it? There was a Democrat running in every state legislative race. Well, now we don't see that so much. It seems – by my math, there's 115 state races that are up, and by my math, there was – Just a hair over 50% of those had no choice. I mean, it was just one party. And the Democrats seem to be running a lot fewer candidates in state legislative races.
Well, I think that recruiting candidates is getting to be more of a challenge. With the political climate, people are not so inclined to jump in and say, yeah, I think that's something I'd like to do. The rhetoric has been pretty harsh. And even within parties, it's been pretty tough.
Yeah.
And so I don't blame people for not wanting to step up and do that because it is a commitment. It's a commitment that requires your family and your friends and everyone to be on board and be supportive. And it takes time and effort. And it's difficult, especially if you have a full-time job, especially if you have other commitments. It's something that you really need to take into consideration whether or not this is right for you. And it's become a little bit more difficult to find people who are willing to make that commitment.
Rich, I wish people could see us because both Lisa and I are nodding our heads at each other during much of this segment because she's absolutely right. People seem to have this notion that Lisa and I we can go out and tap the next person in line and get them to run for a public office. And it's just – It doesn't work that way, especially because you're not going to be successful if you don't want the job, right? So we could probably go get some college kid to put his name on the ballot or her name on the ballot, but that's just – I don't know. That seems like it's a waste of everybody's time.
We've got phone lines. They are all filled up right now. If you're calling with a question or comment, you can hang on the line for just a bit. Otherwise, you can post on our Westside Facebook page. Before we go to our second break here, I want to talk about the 7th Congressional District and – that, of course, is Sean Duffy is the incumbent. He's being challenged by Don, I believe it's Rayla of Superior as a Republican challenger. And Mary Heft of Rice Lake and Joel Lewis of Wausau are facing off on the Democratic side. Real quick, Don Rayla, is he a threat to Sean Duffy? He lost against him in 2010, I believe, or maybe it was 2010.
Never heard of the guy, and
no.
He's not a threat. I mean,
Mary Heft, on the Democratic side, has gotten a lot of endorsements in her bid to take that seat away from Sean Duffy. I mean, Dave Obey, former congressman of that district, giving her the nod, along with Assembly Democrats, Nick Milroy, I think Janet Buley maybe, former legislators, Bob Jouk, Mary Hubler, Frank Boyle. I mean, I'm from Superior, so I know those names, mm-hmm. and those were powerhouses. So what kind of boost does that give her against her challenger from Joel Lewis?
Well, I think in a election like this, where the turnout is probably going to be rather low, I think that endorsements like that probably carry a lot of weight. The problem with the 7th congressional district is that it's geographically extremely large.
It's insane.
And I'm not entirely sure that the people down in Monroe County know who Bob Jauch is.
Right.
So, you know, whether or not that helps down there, I don't know. But those are obviously you know, legislators from the northwestern part of the state, the northeastern part of the state, which is also in the 7th, mm-hmm. you know, has a different demographic. And so, you know, I mean, it is what it is, and endorsements are what they are. And, you know, Mary has done a very good job of going out and getting those. So
the 7th congressional district, geographically speaking, I think it's larger than plenty of countries maybe in the world.
I would bet that's
Well, it's
true.
Half the state. I mean, yeah, you take the 3rd and the 7th, cut a diagonal line across the state of Wisconsin, we've got half the state between the two of us.
800-228-5615. We're going to take our final break here on the west side because we've got so much more to talk about and we've barely scratched the surface. I'm joined by Lisa Herman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and Brian Westrait of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. We're talking about tomorrow's primary races. We're going to get through some of the contests there. Also going to look forward to the general November general election. So let us know what you think. 800-228-5615. We'll start working through some calls in just 1 minute.
When are the polls open? Am I already registered? Where do I vote? Who's on the ballot and what do they stand for? If you're new to the state or new to voting, go to wisconsinvote.org. It's your one-stop shop for the basics. What you need to register, where to go, and who'll be on the ballot. And Wisconsin Vote lets you dig deeper with candidate information, interviews, and articles. Visit wisconsinvote.org, a service of Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, encouraging families and friends to talk about advanced care planning. Information, guidance, and support resources are available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org.
The new musical production of Michael Perry's Population 485 at the Big Top Chautauqua will be the highlight of our new Big Top trip via Lamer's Motor Coach to Shawamigan Bay, August 28th and 29th. Read all about it at wpr.org/travel.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the primary election tomorrow. Polls open at 7 o'clock in the morning and close at 8 p.m. WPR will be having we'll have our regional election coverage starting tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and we'll stay on the air with analysis and results until the races are decided. And we're going to be following, you know, the 3rd Congressional, the 7th Congressional, along with the state legislative races in our territory. 800-228-5615 is the number to call in right now if you've got a question for Brian Westrait or Lisa Herman. Brian Westrait is the 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair, and Lisa Herman is the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party Chair. They're both in the studio with me. We're talking politics. Let's go to Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I live in a district that's, you know, I live in Colfax, and it's pretty much been decided that there probably will be a Republican assembly person because of the redistricting.
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally, I've been a self-employed business person for 35 years. And for me, my business has never been worse since Scott Walker took over our state. And I think we lead the nation in the loss of middle-class jobs. And the nature of my business is that I need middle-class people, people with expendable income, to, you know, come into my small business and purchase what I make. So I'm wondering, in light of what Donald Trump said about Scott Walker, that he had been a disaster for the state of Wisconsin, why Mr. Westrait actually supports Donald Trump. And for me, is Donald Trump really the kind, if you have children, is he the kind of person that you would look up to and say to your children that this is the man who's going to lead the free world? For him to say that he supports Donald Trump because he's not Hillary Clinton, that's not good enough of an answer for me. I want to hear some real support and some real reasons why he thinks that he deserves to be president of the United States.
All right. Willem, thanks so much for the call. Brian, what's your thoughts on that? We're going to get to the Trump effect a little bit later here. But,
sure. I'll try and go quick. I mean, yeah. I do have a 5 and a 7-year-old, or excuse me, 7 and 9-year-old kids. Mm-hmm. So I do. Look, it's a binary choice. As we talked about earlier, that you know it's been a two-party system since the second presidential election in this country. I support Donald Trump. I mean, I guess Willem, sorry if it's not good enough for him, but I absolutely do support Donald Trump because I believe he will be demonstrably better than Hillary Clinton. That being said, look, my main issue this cycle is we are $20 trillion in debt. That's $212,000 per federal taxpaying unit, which amounts to 3.9 years of labor, of one American's labor. Our average labor production is 3.9 years. It's $3 trillion more than our gross domestic product. So we owe $3 trillion more than every drop of labor of every American for an entire 365-day year. So that's why I believe that Donald Trump will be better at getting that under control, at getting us back on a path of fiscal responsibility. And then finally, because as Director Comey said, she can't be trusted with top secret information. What else do you need to know about a president? So, I mean, hopefully that's good enough for others, if not for Willem.
All right. Lisa Herman, any reply to any thoughts on what Willem mentioned or the fact that his district, whether he votes Democrat or not, will likely have a Democrat in the fall?
Well, as far as Donald Trump goes, I think that is a perfect example of how someone who is not likely to learn how to compromise and work with the people who actually need to enact the laws. So I disagree with Brian on that.
That's not a surprise. Shocker, right? Not a surprise.
So
the 67th District, that's actually Willem's from the 67th mm-hmm. Assembly District, six candidates. I mean, that's crazy to me. It's not crazy, but it's a lot of people. Tomorrow on the Republican side of the ballot, voters will have to choose between Travis Hakes of Elk Mound, Tony Zammit of Chippewa Falls, Rob Summerfield of Bloomer, and Michael Hankey of Chippewa Falls. On the Republican side, do you think Brian Westrate, any one of these gentlemen have a better chance than others, or are you just going to have to wait and see?
I do think one of them has a better chance than others, but I'm not going to say it because we keep our nose out of primaries. But all four gentlemen, I think, are good candidates. They're good guys. They're committed to the community. So we're happy to move forward with whomever comes out of that primary.
And also, there was a release that came from Tony Zammit that said that there was some dirty tricks being employed, basically accused Mike Hankey of claiming that Tom Larson, who had held the seat for 6 years, endorsed him. But I guess Tom Larson, has he endorsed a candidate? I think he came out and said he did not.
Yeah, not to the best of my knowledge, he hasn't.
Sure.
You know, I can't speak to Tony's release. I haven't seen it.
Sure.
We'll have a unity breakfast after tomorrow, and I believe all four gentlemen are very committed to holding on to that seat for the Republican Party. This politics. Look,
sure.
You have a transfer of power without a single drop of blood being shed. That's a magical thing that the American experience. A little rhetorical.
Taken for granted a lot.
It is. I mean, so you spar with some words. So what?
Okay. And on the Democratic side of the 67th, we've got Dennis Hunt and Denny Doughty, both of Chippewa Falls, I believe. Mm-hmm. What do we know about these men? Are you going to make any predictions? Are you going to endorse?
No,
Lisa Herman.
No. I don't make endorsements.
Sure.
No, I think both of them would be excellent choices for the office. You know, they both have local experience, and they're both from the area. I think that they are pretty equal candidates. So I look forward to seeing which one's going to come out on top tomorrow.
I want to go back to the phones. We've got Chris. We've got someone in Bridge Creek. Is it Kirsten or Kristen?
It's Kristen.
Kristen, well, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just want to say, I think if we look throughout the history of our political system, that all the rhetoric and all the things that people are saying, if you look back at many elections over the past 200 years, we've had many terrible things said about all sorts of candidates. So if that heartens anybody But this is a unique situation. I think we've experienced this before as our country. That being said, I really think that two things. I'm a business person and have an MBA, not that that really matters at anything. But the first thing I was taught in school is you can't put your opponent in a position where they don't have options. And I really feel like we've put our opponents, whether Democrat or Republican, into positions that we don't have options to make choices on behalf of the people. It's either like one way or my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And we really have come to that point where, if you can't compromise or you can't give someone an out or do something, then you are at a stalemate. And I think that's really been shown throughout our local politics and throughout our national politics.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering, like, how do we get through this? And how, on a local level, do we say, you know what, yeah, I really feel that, as your gentleman said, our fiscal budget is the main thing. Well, there's a lot of other issues.
Sure.
And how do we get to that common ground between both parties to really solve the problems that our society needs to solve, not just fiscal, but social and all these other things? So I'm looking for answers from you guys.
Great.
To say, how do you come together and solve those?
Great question, Kristen. And this kind of brings to mind some lawmakers on the Republican side and on Democratic side that were known for it seems to be less common now, but known for working a lot more with across. I think of Luther Olson, I'm thinking of another gentleman that actually there was a primary against him, and he had forget it. But anyhow, how do we get past this ultra polarization?
Well, I mean, I think in a nutshell, it's like I tell people that complain about NFL stars making too much money, then turn the TV off. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lisa and I can only deal with the candidates and office holders the people select for us. I mean, so we are in a position we've chosen to run and then be elected by people of our party. And with that comes some obligation, and the obligation is to support and defend those candidates and office holders that the people have selected via the election process. So it's one of these that, like I said earlier, if you don't like the way Congress is going, replacing, continuing with the congressperson you've got, whether it's Ron Kind or Sean Duffy or Paul Ryan, across party lines, well, you can't really expect something new if you put the same person back in there. So to a certain extent, we're getting the government we have asked for. That being said, Lisa and I were just talking before about how much we have in common. And if you look at it, really, there are the vast majority of bills that pass both in Madison and in D.C. are bipartisan. I mean, it's something like 80%. I mean, most of the things that get passed there isn't significant disagreement on. But ultimately, look, if you believe a baby is a life or you believe it isn't, I mean, there's just no compromise there.
Sure.
I mean, if you believe – there are just some things where there isn't a middle ground to be found. But I think we spend so much time – and Lisa mentioned it earlier – the megaphone of social media has caused – the information age has caused those things for which there isn't really any middle ground to overwhelm the significant majority of things where there's a ton of middle ground.
Sure. Well, we hear that argument in the state. I mean, the governor, when he's – and the Republicans are accused of not letting the Democrats in on anything by a lot of folks. But – and then – so they'll say 90% of the bills are bipartisan. But then you hear reports of – the Leader Telegram did an analysis where none of the local lawmakers that were Democrats had any bills move anywhere, I think,
correct,
or for the most part. And right, when it comes to substantive, like – really big bills like Act 10 or whatever, it's always party line. So
yeah, I would maybe disagree that the on the bipartisanship.
There are plenty of bills like when they recognize someone. I mean, is that what they're talking about?
Yes. There's a lot of voice votes and things like that that happen that where there's no actual record of whether how bipartisan they were or not.
Yeah.
All those in favor, aye. All those opposed, no. It passes. Oh, look, it's bipartisan. So I think that those places where in the laws that have been passed that do have, votes that we can go back and look at, I think you'll find that they are far more partisan than.
But there, not to say that there's, I mean, there is plenty of bipartisanship that happens, but.
Oh, yes.
But depending on what side of the fence you are, I think your impression of what it looks like is different.
Well, you know, it comes to back to the thing, if you don't care who gets the credit, you can make a lot of things happen.
Right.
But those in the leadership positions have to want
politics is a very credit-driven business.
Credit, it seems to be.
We've got two other state assembly races, the 29th and the 30th, both have primaries tomorrow. But I think this is interesting because the 67th, the 29th, the 30th, all the incumbents have decided they're not going to run again. And those are all Republican incumbents. Lisa Herman, is this a prime opportunity for Democrats to pick it up?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I think that in all three of those cases, that this is an excellent opportunity for the Democrats to pick up some seats.
And once the general candidates are decided, I mean, how hard is the Republican Party going to have to work to keep those from the flipping to the Democratic side?
It's a challenge. I mean, every race, especially at the state assembly level, just because that's where oftentimes the partisanship isn't as close, because you'll have people who know these. I mean, they know these people. They're friends, they're neighbors. They go to church. They go to coffee clatch together. I'll never forget a gentleman friend of mine said, well, yeah, I know he's a Democrat, but my boys played football with his boys. You know what I mean? And so that's certainly a lot more challenging, a lot less defined than races above that. The majority in the state assembly is significant. I think it's 66 or 67 out of the 99 at this point. But, you know, Dean Knutson, John Murtha, and then Tom, you know, I think the three gentlemen who have done well, they're very connected to their communities. John's been in there forever, I think, Murtha.
I think 10 years.
It'll just wait. I mean, Wisconsin has about 800,000 people that vote in a presidential cycle who don't vote in a gubernatorial, right? And that's where we think we see the shift in Democrat-Republican voting percentages. So it's a challenging year to be a Republican, to be sure, but we're going to work hard to hold on to all three.
Sure. 800-228-5615. We can maybe take another caller or so. We're talking about the fall the fall general election, also the partisan primary, which is tomorrow. And I'm joined by Brian Westrate. He's the 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair. And Lisa Herman is the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party Chair. A reminder, we're going to have election coverage right here on 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW tomorrow night, starting at 8 o'clock. And we're going to go until the races that we're watching are decided. So check that out. We've got the U.S. Senate race, and it's basically a replay of what happened in 2010. Which a lot of people were surprised by. I want to start with Lisa Herman. This Marquette poll showed in July, I believe it was, 49% of likely voters favored Russ Feingold, while 44% supported Ron Johnson, the Republican in the race. What's driving those numbers? And I also noticed that Feingold's support had slipped a little bit from the June to July. It may be negligible from, I think he was at 51 and then he went down to 49. So is this going to be the year for Feingold to get his seat back?
I would hope so. Russ has a vast amount of support around the state, and he's done a great job of getting out to all of the counties twice now since he announced that he was going to run again. He's been out talking to people. He listens to what people have to say, and he really is a very independent-minded. And so I think that this is an excellent opportunity for him to go back and represent us in the Senate because, frankly, Senator Johnson has been rather incognito. He apparently No, he hasn't done very much.
I bet you Brian Westray would disagree.
I am going to disagree, obviously. I mean, he's the head of Department of Homeland Security, a very important Senate committee. And, you know, look, Ron visited all 72 counties in like 14 days yeah. within the last couple of months. I mean, so the whole 72 counties thing is wearing a little thin with Russ. But I think the Senate race is one of the darndest things that – you won't hear Lisa call Russ Senator Feingold. And when I was growing up, I mean, for the 6 years he was out, he was always Senator Feingold. You call Senator when they get out. And Ron also doesn't want to be called Senator Johnson. You have two guys who are running away from the fact that they both have been U.S. senators because people hate Washington, D.C. so much.
Wow.
So I find this race fascinating. Russ Feingold is trying to run as the challenger, as the new guy. When he was a sitting senator for, what, three terms, 18 years? Like, it's just fascinating to me that how dysfunctional D.C. must be that senators don't even want to be called senator anymore.
Yeah.
But obviously, we think that Ron has done a great job. You know, the people rejected Russ once. I hope that they'll do so again.
And very quickly, there's definitely, of course, we could talk about the general election with regards to the 7th. But well, real quickly, let's do some rapid fire. I guess we don't know. You're not going to say, all right, because the primary hasn't been finished. All right. So anyway,
can't guess.
State legislative race. 68th Assembly seems to be getting some attention. Our reporter down in Madison, Sean Johnson, the political reporter for WPR, seems to think that that could be a toss-up. What do you think about that, Brian Westray?
Of course. It's rough. It's going to be close because Kathy won the first time, I think, by like 200 votes, something like less than 200 votes. And then it was close again. And so she's running for a third time. Howard, as I understand it, has run into some physical challenges with his eyes. And so he hasn't been able to run the campaign that I think many people expected him to run. The Democrat Party here in Eau Claire, I think, has really picked up the slack for him. But that's a close race. It's a close race because it's a close district. Absolutely.
Yeah. Trump. Oh, sorry.
Howard is an excellent candidate for that district. You know, he brings the same type of attitudes and that they expect from a candidate. And so I think he's going to do a great job there.
All right. We've got less than a minute. Trump v. Clinton. Let's start with you, Lisa Herman.
Clinton, hands down.
Hands down, okay. And
she's going to bring you know, the unity and togetherness that we need in order to make what changes are possible with the dysfunction that we have in the legislatures at the federal level.
Okay, and Brian Westray, what do you think Trump's odds are?
It's going to be close no matter what happens, but I think Trump can win. I think the Hillary's problem is she has to run as wanting to extend the last 8 years that I think many people are not happy with.
All right, well, with that, thank you both very much for your discussion. I always appreciate it. Brian Westray is the 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair, and Lisa Herman is the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party Chair. Thanks for all the calls. Tune in tomorrow night. We're going to be doing election coverage right here on Wisconsin Public Radio starting at 8 o'clock. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. Have a safe and productive week.